Welcome back to Blockchain Radio. I'm Pierre Bourque in Ottawa, Canada, and pleased to have joining us today Dilip Sarangan from a company called Fun. Dilip is joining us from Dallas, Texas. Hello, Dilip. How are you today?
Good. How are you doing, Pierre?
Terrific to have you on Blockchain Radio. I'll note for our listeners that Frost & Sullivan is described as world-renowned for its role in helping investors, corporate leaders, and governments navigate economic changes and identify disruptive technologies. Look, you're going to be talking to an audience of people here involved in the blockchain and crypto space. We all think we're up to our necks in disruptive technology. But what's of greater interest today, and as succeeding days come along of incurring, is this whole phenomenon of the coronavirus that has taken on a life of its own. You wrote for your website a very interesting do with the next generation of IoT and aligning it with the concerns of coronavirus. That's where we're talking today. Give us a sense of Frost & Sullivan and how you decided to become interested in IoT.
I actually joined Frost & Sullivan back in 2006. So it's been about 14 years now. And I started, back then, obviously, as now, we're a market research consulting firm, and we're focused on helping our customers navigate through the changes with disruptive technologies and also helping them in growing in this completely uncertain evolving world as it is. Initially, when I first started at Frost, I covered different technologies and solutions like video surveillance, building automation, smart homes. Over time, I actually did leave Frost in the middle for a while to start up a machine-to-machine practice at another firm, and then came back to Frost about 4.5 years ago to start up the Internet of Things practice. So I've been part of IoT and covering the different technologies, applications of IoT for the last 14 years or so. So it's not something new to me, but I know to a lot of our clients, as well as a lot of people that listen to your radio, they think IoT is this new phenomenon. But in reality, a lot of the applications, a lot of the different vertical market solutions for IoT have been around for decades. Something like CCTV and video surveillance has been around for 50, 60, 70 years. Building automation systems have been around for decades. Fleet management, different technologies in the home, things that help with mobility, as well as different solutions that businesses do employ. All of these solutions, these sensors, have been around for a long time. What's really changing about it is now it's such a massively evolving and expanding ecosystem that now it's not really about just connecting devices and connecting these different things, but rather about gaining insight and creating intelligence out of it. And that's really what IoT is really about today. It's more about using the data that's coming in from all these sensors and making sense of it, creating intelligence that can actually be used by enterprises to improve their business or improve their operations, used by consumers so they can get a better sense of how they're using devices and what they're doing in their home, and also for governments to really be able to use the data that's coming out of all these devices to improve the lives of their residents and citizens.
So data analytics is an increasing component of Internet of Things. As we're talking today, Dilip, the last few days and last week in particular, extremely difficult on global tech stocks, the stock market having some of their worst days, although things have recovered in this week. But that has been something that's been impacted by coronavirus. To your article here in terms of the IoT and where it fits with respect to coronavirus.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, everything that we're seeing about this coronavirus, it's obviously, for people that are in general in good health, it's coming on like a mild variation of a cold. It's not anything more than that. It's obviously impacting from a health and wellness standpoint. It's really impacting the people that do have some underlying conditions. And when you see the people that have, lost their lives because of the virus, it's been more related to the underlying illness than it has been to the coronavirus. But the coronavirus really, it impacts the global supply chain. because the Chinese economy has really been closed off for the last month or so, because people aren't really shipping goods out of China, people aren't traveling to China, and when China controls about 17% of the global trade, a whole month of disruption obviously results in a massive economic impact. When we think about it from a tech company standpoint, think of the supply chains of companies like Samsung and Apple and Dell and Microsoft and everyone else. A lot of their hardware products are built in China. And if they're built in China and there's no products getting out of there, that's going to disrupt the supply of those products. And so these companies are not going to be able to sell as much as they normally would have, which obviously results in their revenues going down and, you know, potentially, depending on how long this virus actually maintains its stranglehold over the global population, this could result in possibly recession or even some kind of a depression, just because it's something that impacts global trade on a very, from a very significant standpoint.
We're in conversation with Dilip Sarangan. He's Global Research Director, Internet of Things with Frost and Sullivan, and he's joining us from Dallas, Texas. And I wonder, you know, it's funny, as you're talking, we have TV monitors here in our studio, and we've got the different TV networks up. And a moment ago, as you were talking, I watched as a couple of news where authorities are checking citizens' temperatures with certain types of gauges, handheld gauges, and they've got their masks on and they're top to bottom, trying to protect themselves from coronavirus. But they're going through the population as the population moves through whatever checkpoint that is. Is there a role to play with Internet of Things as these IoT devices start to propagate throughout a community or a city? Is there a role and an opportunity there in terms of being able to detect infectious diseases early?
I think there is a big role that IoT can play. It's something that, from an IoT perspective, it obviously would require a large-scale global planning effort to really have these sensors available at a lot of different places and be able to gauge, you know, whether people have elevated temperatures or some kind of symptom that can be detected using sensors. That global scale of deployment is obviously not something that's feasible in the current environment, for sure. I don't think that every country can do that. A country like China, where it is a closed-off economy, the government does control a large segment of the technology market, it is definitely possible. They can deploy sensors all over the country. We've seen it in the past with them deploying video surveillance cameras. There are cities in China where there are 600,000 cameras used for public safety. Obviously, in a country like China, it's something that's possible. Globally, it's a little bit of it's a much more difficult task, because there are a lot of privacy concerns and a lot of security implications of having sensors and devices out that the government is going to be using to detect whether the population has a certain virus or has a certain condition that they can detect using these sensors. So it's something that obviously is a much bigger challenge in a global environment, but in certain places it is possible to do. And IoT does play a huge role. That visual that you were just talking about, I believe that was in South Korea. And they have these mobile checkpoints that they're making all drivers go through, where they can check their temperatures and gauge whether they have an elevated temperature. So if they do, you can quarantine them or put them run further tests to ensure that they don't have the coronavirus. It's just a regular cold or a regular fever. It's something that they're doing in South Korea. But, you know, these mobile scanners can be deployed globally. And it's obviously a much more difficult task in the United States or in Canada, just because it might be a little bit harder to get the population to go through these checkpoints. But you could do it in schools potentially. So when students are coming in, you can make sure that nobody has an elevated temperature. If they do, move them into the nurse's office so that they can be checked out to ensure that they don't before they go back to the general population, where, you know, kids, for the most part, are very messy. And being messy and, you know, touching different things and getting their hands everywhere, getting their hands in their mouths and on their faces, they are obviously most susceptible to spreading these kind of airborne diseases. However, you know, we haven't really seen a large number of children get the coronavirus, which is a great thing, because I have a 6-year-old at home and I really don't want her catching anything from anyone. But then kids do land up being transmitters of these diseases on a very, very regularly. And so keeping them away from that, maybe doing it in at malls, places where a lot of people congregate, either church or, you know, that obviously requires a lot more planning. Another thing is, you know, ports of entry. Having these scanners available so that every person that's coming into any port of entry, either from on an international flight or even a domestic flight, can get checked out, or rather, at least they can detect whether they have elevated temperatures, so they can be moved to the side and tested to ensure that they don't have any symptoms or they're not contagious. Those are things that can be done. IoT can really help with doing that. And, you know, over the last few years, there's been a huge push to migrate the data analytics capabilities of IoT from the cloud to the edge. So which means on these devices themselves. So if you can actually do it right there, get near real-time information and intelligence, that makes it a much more faster process in terms of how quickly we can detect and quarantine individuals that may potentially have these kind of viruses and are susceptible or likely to spread it. So we can ensure that the general population doesn't, that the diseases don't spread as fast as they have with something like the coronavirus.
Yeah, and I note that, let me give you three examples that just popped to mind. First of all, airports are using technologies, authorities are using technologies that permit them, whether, you know, the population likes it or not, to absorb certain digital communications between passengers and the outside world. They're also using facial recognition technology. Even here in our own backyard here, it may be the same at your Dallas Stars hockey games as well, Dilip, because we have them here with the Ottawa Senators. If you want to go into the arena to watch the game, you have to go through metal detectors. So that's something where the people going through into this communal area are going to go through some checkpoint. Is it that much more far-fetched to have that checkpoint also include some kind of a mechanism where they can check your temperatures or other types of technology that allow you to identify whether or not there's a risk factor there that would be broadened should that person be allowed into that. I find Internet of Things quite a fascinating evolution. As you pointed out at the outset, going from the hard as the services side of things, and I suppose software related to that is a big jump. But there's a huge conversation, I'm sure, that is going to be built around what do you do with all of that data? How is it going to be used? And certainly in our case, when you see this morning, the World Health Organization saying that we've now, in terms of coronavirus, saying we've now moved into uncharted territory, that would seem to me to entail that they got to look at new ways to deal with it and not just try the tried and true.
Yeah, I mean, data is a big problem. I mean, right now, until this point, really, people have been really interested, and we've captured a lot of data, but there's too much data. And not all of that data is relevant either. So there's a lot of noise that's built into the data streams that are coming in. And because of that, it's now people are really trying to understand what should they be analyzing, what they shouldn't be analyzing, what data is relevant, what's not, what's important to know, versus what's just noise that they could potentially look at a future date, or they can just ignore completely. So it's been more about data collection for a long time with IoT and the data analytics part. Now that you know, people are really starting to understand that using artificial intelligence, using machine learning and deep learning and all of these new evolutions, there are different ways that they can actually analyze the data. And, you know, data is only, data is obviously very valuable these days, and people really are looking at data as being the next oil in a lot of ways, because of, and calling it the new industrial revolution. That's all well and good, but data just for the sake of collecting data for the sake of collection isn't valuable at all. It's knowing what are the right types of data that people need to be collecting. So even from a government standpoint, it's really understanding what data is useful versus what data is not something that they need to be doing, that they need to stay away from because it's a privacy issue and the citizenry might not be ready for them to collect that data. The data that's collected also needs to be put to practical good use. Whereas there is a human element involved there when it comes to deciding what data is useful versus what data is not. There's only so much you can teach the artificial intelligence today. And even if you allow the AI to completely go in its own direction or completely switch gear and move into a different direction, there is that ethical dilemma that we face about how far is AI going to go. And, the data is only as useful as the person putting it to use. And there are abuses that do land up happening. It's not as widespread, but if we make it something that's available to everyone and all the governments have access to all of this data, who knows who is going to be using it versus who's abusing the data? You know, we've seen enough instances where data has been abused in the past, and that obviously gives a lot of people pause whether they should be moving in that direction or not.
Philip, have you seen any incidences in the last couple of months here where IoT companies are focusing their energies to help in the fight of coronavirus? Can you point to any tangible examples?
Right now, I think everyone is trying to get a grasp of it. I don't think anyone is necessarily fully equipped to be able to help. I think there are a lot of healthcare companies that are working on devices that can be used for detection. The problem is really on the ground. How do you deploy something so massive? How do you get this huge machinery of government to actually act in a very fast manner? I mean, when you look at government itself, the government is always like the Titanic, right? It's hard to really make it shift gear and change directions. So when we're looking at government per se, how do we make government needs to be a little bit more flexible in terms of how they actually react to these things and how they can move things along faster. When you have these massive bureaucracy and red tape that you have to get through to actually deploy anything new, it becomes a big challenge. Just on the ground right now, the stories that are coming out of cities like New York and Seattle and Miami are that hospitals and clinics and nobody really has any kind of tests available for the coronavirus. So how do you go from, you know, you could always deploy technology and you could plan it out and do it well over time. But for something that's going on right now, there is really no way for them to move that fast.
Yeah, you're talking about being proactive rather than reactive. In our current circumstance with coronavirus, the global community, governments, and independent agencies like the World Health Organization are reacting to something. They're trying to keep fears calm. There's always that fear of the unknown. In fact, the old saying, there's nothing to fear but fear itself. But then you get into what you're suggesting here, Dilip, and the technology itself, if it actually, number one, exists, and if it exists, is it available? I mean, imagine that I think a week or two ago, I was reading about Chinese manufacturers of face masks. Oh, set aside for a moment the fact whether or not face masks actually work for somebody who's not infected, but the actual availability of those face masks is being encumbered by the fact that the Chinese desperately need every single one they can get their hands on, so that's affecting the export market. Tea business. If you're Apple, for that matter, any tech company, and you have production capacity coming out of China, and those factories are closed, that's going to impact everybody else.
And, you know, I had this conversation with a colleague yesterday. And, you know, the question that was asked to me was, can a company like Apple move all of its manufacturing to the US so they're not impacted as badly by the coronavirus? But that's not such an easy ask either. It takes about a year to 2 years to actually set up a factory, tool it completely, and have production and, then staff it, have production coming out. And for them to be at full capacity, it could be anywhere between 1 and 3 years. So when you're looking at that kind of a timeline, nothing that Apple does right now to try and move their manufacturing out of China into the US or even to Mexico or anywhere close by is going to have an impact on their supply chain for a couple of years. So every company that's basically going through this issue right now of not being able to have products being shipped out of China, that until the time that the Chinese borders are opened up again and there are flights and trade resumes with China, that could take anywhere between a couple of months to a few, a little longer than that. Depends on what the impact of the coronavirus is going to be at that point in time. And we haven't even gotten to the warm months yet. We don't know if, like a cold virus or like any other typical similar respiratory virus that we've encountered in the past, is the coronavirus going to slow down when the heat sets in? Or is it something that's going to continue to have an impact during the summer months? And then, you know, that usually the impacts are worse in the colder months with these kind of viruses, but we don't know how it's going to impact during the summer months. So we don't have any information, any data available about this specific strain of virus to be able to make those judgment calls and say that, okay, you know what, China's going to open up in another 6 weeks. We don't know about that. We don't know for sure if that's going to happen. And that's the uncertainty that's causing the stock markets to react the way they have over the past week. It's because there's so much uncertainty in that situation. And investors, if there's one thing that they hate, it's uncertainty. The more uncertainty that's baked into the system, the more likely that the stock prices are going to tank. And the more they tank, the faster we're going to be moving into a recessionary type environment. And we don't know when things will actually go back to normal or resume to the levels they were prior to this coronavirus being detected, to know exactly how long that might take. So there's so much uncertainty that's baked into it right now that we just don't know exactly how this is going to impact. And, you know, I know your listeners are focused more around blockchain. You know, even from an IoT perspective, blockchain is one of those technologies that everyone's paying close attention to and trying to see if distributed ledger is something that they can actually use from an IoT standpoint to improve the security of the data and build trust in data. And it's something that's being looked into. However, it's not something that's necessarily been monetized. And we need the whole industry to kind of coalesce to move in that direction. But it's such a highly fragmented ecosystem as it is with IoT. Now you add another fragmented segment with blockchain and it becomes even harder. And so there's so much, you know, from a technology standpoint, we've seen technology grow by leaps and bounds over the last 5 years. However, that's caused a lot more uncertainty as well.
Yeah, and let me just add, because I know it's a bit of a doom and gloom scenario when we talk about coronavirus, but when I look at the Johns Hopkins statistics that are up on COVID-19, for the first time in the past 24 hours, and we're speaking here on March 3rd, and so listeners may be listening to us sometime in the future, so these numbers are going to change. But for the first time since they started to track the number of confirmed cases, the number of deaths, and the number of recovered, for the first time, there are now over 50% of those confirmed that are now recovered. So that's moving in the right direction. It's still 2.5-3% of the point. But the larger picture is much better, and hopefully that moves trend-wise in that. Look, I want to leave our conversation, Dilip, with one final question for you. If some of our listeners, whether they're in the blockchain space or they're in the IoT space, if they want to follow up with you on anything that we've talked about today, how can they?
Best way to reach me would be via email It's my first name, Dilip, Dilip dot Sarangan, Sarangan at frost.com. Shoot me an email. Love to continue the conversation. Love to hear other people's thoughts about exactly how they see things panning out. And like you said, I mean, you know, the hope is that this is going to be, you know, when you look at the global impact of the coronavirus, really, it's not really from a health and wellness perspective that has people freaked out right now. It's not necessarily that, you know, a large number of people that are contracting the virus are passing away. It's really an economic, the impact of it has been more economic than it has been from a health standpoint. So the only thing to say is, you know, do what you would normally do. Wash your hands, stay away from strangers, try to avoid some highly densely populated areas or malls, that kind of stuff. And I think the people should be fine. And I think, and I'm really hoping that, you know, the Chinese economy does open up as well, because that, from an economic standpoint, would be the fastest way for the global economy to really recover from the impacts of the virus long term.
Fascinating conversation. Dilip Sarangan, the Global Research Director, Internet of Things with Frost and Sullivan, joining us from Dallas, Texas today. Thanks so much, Dilip. Much appreciated today.
Thanks so much. Really appreciate your time, Pierre. And look forward to hearing what your listeners might have to say about this in the future.
Excellent. And thank you for listening. This is Blockchain Radio.